Thanks for listening to the Drummer's Weekly Groovecast. You can contact the show at twitter.com/DW Groovecast and through Facebook at facebook.com/Drummer's Weekly Groovecast.
Good evening.
I am warning you right now, if you touch my drums, I will stab you in the neck with a knife.
Ain't a fucking.
Mom!
Take it easy. Lower it.
I'm not gonna lower it. I have to do this now.
I don't mind you playing it, but lower it.
Well, we gonna straighten out?
No, we had a problem. I mean, we tried to do everything we could.
What do you mean?
Well, you know what I mean.
Nice!
A little trouble there. You're rushing.
Yeah, well, you know, that's just like your opinion, man.
Yeah!
Man, you ever think about getting out of the buying and selling business? You know, the drum retailer / secondhand market.
Where's this going?
You know, man, I've had it with this stuff. I've been doing it for years. I'm going to get out of that thing, you know. I'm going to freaking settle down with one kit, be a one kit man.
I never said that. I mean, the last part I didn't say. I know you know. I couldn't help it. If these jackasses would call me for gigs, I wouldn't have to go peruse Craigslist to make money.
Man, you are worse than any smack addict I know.
Man, this dude, all right, look, I want to clean out my garage, and I admittedly went and bought half a garage full of stuff the other day. But I mean, I couldn't help it, man. It was just, I'm going to make some money.
This is time. You know what? I'm going to do you a solid. You guys, make sure you check John's Facebook page, the old marketplace page here over the next few days. There's a cornucopia vintage goodness. A few months.
Some of it is. Some of it's just crap. But this guy had a basement full of stuff and was ready to get rid of it. So I made two trips with a van, mind you.
Low be it from you to spurn some gentleman wanting to unburden himself from a lifetime of gear.
I don't ever want to be responsible for someone's misery over having too much gear. I will help you.
I think I am about like the average drummer when it comes to having amounts of gear that you sell from time to time and then acquire new gear and whatnot. And that stresses me out. I don't see how you do it.
Well, to be honest with you, in the last year or so, I haven't done anything, and that's what's even more stressful.
Well, you pared it down.
Stuff. Yeah. A little bit, but there's just so much stuff. And I think the biggest issue is it's overwhelming to even think about where to start, because we're talking about odds and ends from 25 years of buying and collecting and getting lots of stuff. And so there's just always that oddball stuff. So the good part of it is everything in my garage is profit at this point.
All right.
But we're talking about just craziness, like parts, you know, 20 kits worth of parts, you know. Yeah. Just like, where do you start with that? And I think my brain has kind of gotten to this, like, okay, maybe I just start with a brand. Like, right, everything Ludwig I have, I'm going to sell first and just focus on that. So it's not just like this stress-inducing craziness. But I'm lazy enough, too. I think about packing and shipping and
that's
beg
the part.
All the locals, like, dude, I know I live far out of town, but come out.
Yeah.
Because I'm going to give you stuff.
Yeah. The packing and the shipping is the part that wigs me out, because of just the, you get into the whole mindset of like, oh, you know, FedEx is going to drop this off the back of a truck, and I've already paid $90 to ship something that should cost $20.
Especially now.
You know, especially now. And then you never know when that receiver on the other end of it is going to be uber critical from the standpoint and maybe have a little buyer's remorse, and, you know, the nick on the drum that you disclosed to him is significantly worse to him now than it was 3 days ago.
Dude. And
I know you've been there.
And also, you know, eBay used to be behind the buyer, behind the seller, and now it's kind of switched. That makes me nervous too.
Well, it's just also the fees. Ugh.
Yeah. I've never been one to be that tripped out about fees, but we've talked about it before about the exposure you get from eBay versus, you know, consignment in a store or a newspaper ad. I try to look at that realistically, like, oh, it's a worldwide market, so you're going to pay, you know, back in the day, you'd pay more than you pay eBay now to do consignment.
Yeah.
Or, you know, even to put an ad in a paper, you know, so I try to look at that realistically, but I'm less into that mindset if this company that used to be, it was built on sellers and reputation and built on a community.
Yeah.
That's what the whole thing, that was amazing about it. And now as a seller, you're kind of like gritting your teeth, waiting for, you know, the positive feedback, because a seller or a buyer has so much power now.
Yeah.
And that's a drag, because I've been on eBay for 100 years and my reputation is gold. I should never be concerned with that.
Right.
I'm not ripping anybody off. I detail everything. Nobody gets a surprise.
Yeah.
But there's always that guy. So it's like, that's why I'm really more into, like, come to my house and look it over. If you find something later, that's on you. You know, you had every chance to look it over. I tried to disclose everything.
I'm just busting your stones over here, man. I know. But because, I mean, I know that you have made a concerned effort over the past couple of months. Man, you have sold a ton of stuff.
Yeah, man. It's been good.
The garage is thinning out. Well, it was until this week. But I'm sure that it will thin out once again here.
Holla at your boy. Soon.
Holla.
I got stuff.
Yeah, you do.
I don't have 20s Black Beauties or old K's, but I got stuff.
I know.
And I'll beat anybody's price.
I know whenever I have a part requirement, you're the first person I think of.
Well, thanks.
Yeah. Have you ever run across any late 80s Horst Link prototypical bass drum pedals? Just shout my way.
Bill! I got a couple ones. Bizarre, man. I just brought it over here to show Phil, just because it's so weird. I like weird stuff, man. I've had everything I've ever wanted.
I know.
Now I don't care about that. Just give me weird stuff.
Speaking of weird stuff, mm-hmm. You know, I feel like I need to mention something to you real quick. Have I mentioned to you earlier that I have a wackadoo gig that's got me a little bit stressed out this weekend?
Yeah, I kind of like it.
Kind of like that?
No,
thing?
Did I say that out loud? Crap.
Yeah. Right before a vacation, too, right?
It's going to make that vacation worth every penny.
Oh, man, I'm telling you, it absolutely is. It's my penance. It's my, what do you call, self-flagellation prior to the hedonism that I will partake in the week before. But, no, I am seriously preparing for this gig that I've got this weekend, which is, I think we have probably hinted from time to time on different shows about, you know, of course, preparing for gigs, but also these wacky gigs that come in from time to time, and I've got one of them that's a stress monster this weekend that I'm preparing for. Furiously going over every style that I've ever learned to play in my life and quickly going between brushes and mallets and sticks to mallets to brushes to sticks. Slow down, speed up, faster, softer.
I'll be phoning in my regular gigs this weekend.
Oh, yeah.
At peace with the better you than me mindset I'm throwing your way.
Well, I'll tell you, I've worked with these folks before.
That's good.
Yeah, and they're really good people. And
makes a big difference.
The music director that runs this show is aces. He's Very, very good. He, of course, he knows the show like the back of his hand. And so he gives very, very good, clear cues, which, again, another thing we've talked about before. You got to keep your head on a swivel. You know, really make sure you're watching those charts, but also have an eye on the music director to give you those cutoffs, those starts, those little count-ins, those nods. Last time through this vamp, you know, that sort of stuff. So I'm going to be practicing what I preach this weekend, man.
Sounds like the polar opposite of the legendary R&B singer thrown together band Cranky MD gig.
Right. Well, this is as far as thrown together, away from thrown together as can be. In other words, they did a good job of getting me all the charts and everything well ahead of time. You know, like I said, I've done this gig a few once before. So I know, like I said, I know the ropes a little bit on it, but boy, it is. It's one of those things that if you don't do these gigs, you know, every week or every month or so, if you just do a few of them a year, man, it's, you know, they are the hot spots on your calendar. They are the red letter days.
You're going to do fine.
Thank you, man. I appreciate your confidence. And with that in mind, I'm going to tell you, you're going to do great, man, selling all that stuff out of your garage. It's going to be beautiful.
Man, he's really, his technique in selling is just world class.
That's right. Man, did you notice we just gave each other compliments?
No, really. I sort of didn't receive it that well. I made fun of myself to deflect your positive. Dang it.
So here's another compliment. Do you know how much we've grown in 1 year? Is how we can like dovetail these little silly things into weaving into these topics that we're going to talk about? We're going to pat ourselves on the back with a compliment.
It's now, magic.
Now we can criticize ourselves. But yeah, we're going to talk this week about a couple of different things in our topic, or for our topic for the week. We're going to talk about compliments and criticism, how to take compliments, how to take criticism, how to give compliments, how to give criticism. Because let me tell you, these things in themselves, man, are the proverbial double-edged sword. I'm telling you, they can harm and they can hurt, and they can also be very constructive. And John and I, when we started discussing this topic for the week, we've been on the ends of both of these, and we've had to be the givers of both of these. And so over years and years and years of this type of stuff, we've come across with some good ideas, some things for you to think about, some good ways to respond to these different types of criticisms and different types of compliments. Now, I think the overall global thing that we should probably start this show with is that when it comes to receiving either of these, the global consideration here is you got to consider the source that's giving you these compliments and criticism. So that's our global overall mindset on these.
Yeah, that's a good place to kind of keep as the base of this discussion, because we have oftentimes reacted to both of the scenarios based on just the vibe of the person or the reputation mm-hmm. of the person. And that clearly isn't giving the scenario its due, in my opinion. And I say that from experience. So let's dig into some of that and maybe help, you know, decipher constructive versus negative and all right. that kind of thing, and we can and get into some of the agendas that sometimes there is.
People never have that. Agendas.
Yes,
they're
they
always,
do.
They're always no. pure of intent.
Look, man, I know you're thinking about your little vacation, your head's in the clouds, but you're wrong.
Yeah. Well, the first thing that comes to mind when we're talking about personal experience, it is no surprise to anyone listening to this that the younger musicians are very vulnerable to this type of criticism. I know that I was, man. I'll tell you, bro, when I was especially in my 20s and to some extent even into my 30s, there would be times that I would receive some different pointed criticisms, of which we will say some were unjust, because we know some of the people mutually that we'll be talking about or hinting about. But boy, there are a lot, like you said, a lot of different agendas that go into play with this type of thing. So I think it's very important for the younger generation to learn how to, I like to say, respond to these things instead of, because you made a good point about reacting. Reacting a lot of times, man, is a little bit of a snap, knee-jerk type of action. Mm-hmm. And we don't want to react to these things. We do want to be mindful and respond to them. And that was one of the things that I was extremely guilty of when I was younger, is, man, I used to just completely and totally overreact. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, you would either snap right back at somebody, and that's not good, or you would overreact within yourself and beat yourself up for days, if not weeks, if not months. Well, and that's not good.
I have a theory about that. You're saying overreact. Regardless of the source, regardless of the intent, regardless of the agenda, when we are performing, everything's going to be heightened.
Yeah.
And it makes perfect sense that you might be a little less grounded or a little less diplomatic in your response, because you are, it is, we all know, man, in the middle of a gig, you're not your most rational self. You're not your most, you know, clear thinking self. So there is a perfect example of maybe something to get yourself, you know, acclimated to in responding or in receiving,
right,
or in analyzing, is that oftentimes in the heat of the battle, for lack of better terms, you know, we're not really being rational or considerate of things that maybe in the big picture we should be. So that being said, we could, you know, maybe we need to frame everything we're going to talk about in that.
Sure.
Because I know if someone is to criticize me while we're having dinner versus in the middle of a, you know, the end of a song.
Right.
You know, many factors come into play. You know, who's listening, who witnessed it. You know, you're also talking about something that is so emotionally, mm-hmm, and I don't know, I can't think of the word I'm thinking of, but you know how invested we are in what we do.
Sure.
It's such a personal thing.
It's very intimate.
Yes, very, yeah, intimate. And mm-hmm, so you're just talking about reaction to something that, this isn't like, man, I can't believe you put that tire on that way.
Right.
You know, there's, right, it's a really different animal when we're talking about our performance and our feelings about that.
Which brings me to our perfect world scenario, mm-hmm, which is almost non-existent, especially on the bandstand. In a perfect world scenario, critique and criticism should be given by the person in a very thoughtful and rational manner. In other words, it shouldn't be snapped out. It should be well thought out, and it should be presented that way. But as we know, that seldom is the case. That's seldom going to be the case. I know for myself, being a teacher and then also being a band leader from time to time, I have gotten significantly better, and I'm very mindful about not snapping at either students or not snapping, you know, at someone, especially during a gig,
right,
over something like that. So now with that in mind about learning to give it correctly, on the receiving end of, say, someone who's not being quite as mindful and not being quite as tactful, one of the things that I will tell students, because I think it's important to make students aware of this, just like we're making listeners aware of this as well. If somebody comes right at you with some kind of a very pointed, heated criticism, to the point of, we'll even say, being unjust, if you can suss it in that amount of time and realize that maybe there is an agenda there, one of the things I'll tell everybody is, I say, step back just for a second. Let the person speak. then respond with a question back to them. Okay, I hear what you're saying. Now, do you have some suggestions on how to fix that? Man, that is one of the most tactful, respectful, yet pointed ways to get someone to kind of learn something about them, whether or not they are being just in their criticism.
Yeah, that next step can clearly define agenda oftentimes.
You learn a lot.
Yeah. I will say this. The times when I look back at a few times that stick out of my mind about a heated exchange in the moment, you know, during the gig on the bandstand, I can honestly say, I bag myself all the time, blah, 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 whatever. I'm pretty confident in what I do and what I have to offer. And I know what my strengths are. I know what my strengths aren't. I'm rarely in a situation where those situations are, or those things are challenged. Because I don't put myself in a position where I'm, you know, out of my element. And I just don't. So when I think about the few times that I've had a heated exchange or responded in a way that, looking back, I'm really disappointed in myself over, it had nothing to do with music and everything to do with what might have been going on in my life otherwise. I can clearly think about the times that stick in my mind because I probably had a discussion afterwards about, look, man, I'm sorry I responded that way. You know, I'm sure your intention was not to just undress me and beat me up. This is going on in my life right now. I'm really stressed out about it. It's really, you know, I'm distracted by it. And, you know, this coming at me when I just don't have time for that, you know, was there. But that's something that I just, when we decided we were going to talk about this, that really hit me is like, the few times it was really a drag or really contentious, I think it had nothing to do with what they were saying to me or what I play. Because I'm like, man, screw you, man. I'm playing this. It's fine.
Right.
You know, if you don't like a tempo, you could diplomatically ask me to change it. So it's on you. But my overreaction had to do with something else.
Sure. And, you know, when it comes to somebody that dresses you down in that, and everybody who's been doing this for a little while, at one time or another, you've had it happen. When it comes to somebody that dresses you down on something like that, it is incumbent upon them, which leads back to my point before about, like, for example, of the person who's being dressed down to ask them questions as far as what can I do to do it. It's incumbent upon this person to build you back up or to give you these suggestions and make you better. Because let me tell you, it is no fun, man, being on that other end of it. I think it's a rite of passage, or it used to be, especially back in the day, when the old timers would really get it when they were on a bandstand or when they were in a rehearsal or something like that. And then when they get a chance to be on the giving end of it, it's just a rite of passage for them. Yeah. But it is so incredibly important for that person, if they're going to be a true mentor, if they're going to be a real teacher, if it's somebody that really cares about the criticism that they're giving and it's an honest criticism, that they be right there to help build those people back up. Because I'll tell you, I've got the only time that I really start dressing people down is when I know that they can do something really well and they've been slack or they don't care at the moment of something. But before I actually lay into them, I've already got the build-up plan in the back of my mind as far as like, this is what we're going to do to make it better.
Yeah, that is unfortunately lost on some people. But I think the majority of people who might undress you, and again, it could be something going on in their life that brings it on.
That is,
let's not lose sight of that.
Firmly believe that's the case. Like I said, even if it's one of those things from a memory of being dressed down,
right,
when they were younger.
Yeah, I've had someone actually tell me that before.
Yeah.
I got I got my butt kicked by so-and-so, and you're going to get it. I'm like, that's dumb, but whatever. Okay. But sometimes it's just on a personal level, it could be something else. You know, they're stressed out about that. But I think the hardest thing to have a handle on when you're being criticized is not letting that action from someone else validate the voices in your head, the insecurity in your head, which we as creatives have, we battle with all the time. And I know there's always that guy, I don't have any of that, blah, 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 blah.
They're lying.
You know, either they're lying or a lot of people aren't probably calling them because they're just, they're lost in their own ego and they're just incapable of being, you know, of showing humility and showing respect and showing the true success that is a musical performance, which is team playing and give and take. And, you know, that, so you know, whatever, if you're going to roll your eyes and say, man, I never have those doubts. That's fine. Good for you. But we, most of us do. So my point is, really not doing everything in your power to not let that criticism be velcroed onto yours and it just turning into this giant snowball of insanity. And man, that's a difficult thing to do. I don't necessarily know if I have the solution for everyone because we're all different. I know for me, it's been based on just the comfort of my experience and my ability and knowing that if someone is critical of my playing, it's not that it's necessarily wrong. It's just they want something different because I don't really feel like I play anything that's wrong. I'm too locked into the serving the song to get hung up on that. So that's when I try to keep things in perspective by way of what is this all about.
I think what part of it is also, John, is something that I think virtually all really good players have, and that is the type of self-criticism and the type of standards that they hold themselves to. They've learned that if they elevate their standards and work and prepare to those standards, if they can please themselves, it's seldom going to be the chance that they're not going to please the people that they work with. That's worked for me. That's one of the things that's worked for me, because then, again, if I know that I've done what I need to do and I'm honest with myself, again, and here we go with that whole term again about being honest with yourself. If I know that I'm being honest with myself and I've prepared correctly, anything that someone's going to say to me is going to be a true musical critique. You know what I mean? From the standpoint of like, yeah, you know, let's back off a little bit here. Now let's really bring this thing up. Let's make this big and broad right here and loud, you know. That's just a musical suggestion at that time. It's not a condemnation of something that you're doing. So that in itself helps in a very honest and mindful way when you're doing that. And then part two of this entire thing. Another thing, John, that I'm going to say that you've heard me talk about over the past 3 or 4 months, I've been getting into my mindfulness meditation. It's not the cure-all, and it's not the end-all. It's not this mystical, magical thing that fixes everything, but it does help that much, just a little bit. You'll notice these little subtle aspects of it that will come out from time to time that make you a little less anxious, a little more patient in this. And combining those things, it's not going to do anything but help. It's really not. So with that in mind, one of the things I want to talk about are like a few very common scenarios that we see when it comes in particular to critique on something. And I will never forget, never, ever, ever forget being on a jazz gig probably 15 or 16 years ago it's at a now long closed jazz cafe that was here in Atlanta. I was on a gig with a guitarist and the horn player turned around and said, hey, man, would you mind turning down a little bit? It's a little bit loud. And, man, you would have thought that he just called his wife and kids you know, just the most awful derogatory names ever. And he reacted in this very disgusted way, you know, and turned his amp down. Same horn player turned around right after that, and he goes, "Man, it's all good. Would you have reacted that way if I asked you to turn up?" Now, think about that for a minute, right? Think about, because what we're really getting at here with this entire thing is, again, this was not an attack on this guy's character or attack on this guy's playing. It was a musical suggestion.
Right.
And so that's one of the things that we want to impart, is that let's start rationally thinking about this stuff and sussing this stuff out. Let's step back, think about it instead of reacting, and respond naturally. Because after then, that statement was made about, would you have reacted that way if you would have, you know, if I'd asked you to turn up instead of turn down?
What was the response?
The response was a little bit of a huff, but you could tell that he kind of had painted himself into a corner a little bit with that original reaction. And then he was kind of like, he gave the sort of, yeah, I guess you're right.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
Not convincingly, I'm sure.
Right. But, I'll never forget that.
That's amazing. You know, the other thing about opinions, which a lot of times critique is, I mean, not always. Sometimes it's just the wise old sage really making sense. But taking into account so many variables musically that can be opinions, you know, someone like, man, it just feels like it's dragging, man. Or, you know, I think this song should drive more. I think, you know, you're just hitting your snare drum way too loud. Or there's just way too much cymbal play on it. And, you know, overreacting is something that's not going to solve anything. And trying to look at it like, rationally, like, okay, I know this guy just feels everything on top, so his opinion might, you know, I gotta take it with a grain of salt. He wants everything kind of driving, or he considers energy to derive from tempo, and it doesn't necessarily, that's not necessarily the case. Or, you know, I just feel things and laid back, you know, like, maybe he's right, maybe that song should be a little more. But they're opinions, and I think the best thing for me is just having a really good handle on what I feel is the right approach, and then just being open to, like, maybe he's right. Maybe, you know,
absolutely,
that's all it should be on there. And it kind of tempers, and I say that as an overall thing, like, you know, the age old response, well, that's just your opinion, man, whatever, as opposed to maybe taking it like, oh, that's an interesting opinion, and, you know, maybe that has some validity. We just immediately want to just be defensive,
right?
And as humans, and as creatives, and as drummers, and I laugh about it forever. You know, it's always our fault. You know, when it doesn't feel right, it's always the drummer's fault. You know, all that aside, just being, you know, aware of, you know, people have a different take on things. It's not right or wrong.
Well,
but to immediately just dismiss it might hinder your growth on some level.
Yeah, and sometimes the person, if they give these vagaries, you know, if they give these, well, this thing, it feels like it needs to go this way, or it feels like it needs to do this. Sometimes just by acknowledging that, using a little bit of positive body language with that, a lot of times that fixes it in itself.
Man, no doubt.
You know, it really does. Sometimes, yeah. Sometimes just like you said, literally from a, like when somebody says something might need to drive a little bit more, maybe sometimes just leaning into it with a little bit more physical intent, that cures it.
That's true. Interesting thought. Yeah.
So
I agree.
Yeah. So, I mean, you can, again, like I said, just be mindful of what these people are asking for, and you can sometimes fix it. Now, John, here's an interesting scenario that I think we've all run into from time to time. And it's what I like to call the hidden criticism. and this one works on your mind. And this is one of those mind games that your mind can go nuts with once it receives it. And really what it is it's a compliment, but there's a little dig that's stuck in there as well, a little subversiveness. And like a couple examples of it would be something like, you get finished with a set, you walk over and guy's standing at the bar, standing out in the audience, and he goes, "Man, you really sounded great on that last song." You know, or you know, another drummer's out in the audience and he'll go, "Man, boy, your floor time sure sounds good." You know, what does that mean, man? What does it mean?
Oh, he must overanalyze now.
Yeah. So it's kind of one of these bizarre backhanded compliments.
I like what you were trying to do there. There's a million.
Yeah,
of them.
Yeah, there's a bunch of those.
Man, the color of your drums are amazing.
Yeah.
You have a very unique style.
Yeah. You know, all those little backhanded compliments, to me, those are immediately discarded.
Oh, man, you can't even, yeah.
And that's what I really want to impart upon the listeners, especially the young guys that are out there. If you get something like that that makes you think in that sort of way, just put it in the trash bin.
It is worthless.
It's completely and totally worth. But I wanted to bring it up because it is one of those things that happens from time to time. You get some bizarro thing, and really what they are trying to do, they're trying to make you think. They're trying to turn this thing around in your mind.
Yeah.
To where you'll.
You know, in our circle of friends, there's some doozies that it's kind of an ongoing joke.
Yeah.
I've heard some amazing stuff, man.
Yeah.
Just so good,
John. When you and I were talking yesterday on the phone, man, you made me crawl up into a fetal position.
Oh, man.
over a scenario that
I think you're in good shape.
Well, it was a scenario that has happened to me a few times, especially from some local chaps in town that maybe didn't have the best of intentions. But you will occasionally, and this happened to me again, primarily when I was younger.
Mm-hmm.
Didn't know better. They could see the injured prey out in the field, you know, and they'd come up and throw a last dig in there. But there's a lot of times
a dog smelling fear.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They would throw in these criticisms, or they would, you know, ask you questions and you would tell them about these goals that you wanted to do, or you had these ideas for things that you wanted to do, these grand plans and stuff. And man, they just crap all over them, man. I mean, it's like, man, why would you want to do that? I had a guy once, check this out. This is a perfect example, okay? You familiar with that band Jamiroquai?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I was listening, this was back probably 20 years ago, and I was listening to this recording. And, you know, a lot of their stuff on those first few records they had was very throwback, very kind of 70s and late 60s funk,
mm-hmm.
Motown/funk based kind of stuff. And that was serious throwback thing. Guys were using Fender Rhodes and stuff like that on those records. And I remember this piano player in town. We were riding somewhere to go to a gig, and I was playing it, and he was just kind of looking. And it was funky, man. It was absolutely funky. And this guy was looking at me, and he goes, "What is this?" And I said, "It's Jamiroquai, man. I'm really into it." And his exact response back to it was, "Well, what do you like about it?" How about that, man? Nothing?
Let's change the CD.
What do you like, older, more established jazz musician?
Nothing other than late 50s Blue Note.
Yeah.
So, nothing else matters.
Right. And so one of the points that you were talking about last night when we were talking about this was like, sometimes these guys that throw that kind of like cold water on you,
mm-hmm.
you know, from time to time, that really what they're doing is they're really speaking to themselves.
No doubt. I think almost every time.
Yeah. In other words, they are reflecting upon their crushed dreams or maybe even their lack of impetus to do anything.
True.
And when they see somebody that really wants to do something,
oftentimes they go hand in hand.
Yeah. Somebody wants to start a podcast. Somebody wants to record a record. Somebody wants to do, you know, start a band. Somebody wants to put a project together. They just crap all over it, man. And it's just because, man, they don't have the gumption to do anything about it.
Mm. Yeah, man, that one, that came to me right away, because I've actually been privy to that.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, too many times where there's just someone that is not going to be supportive of any dream you have, because they're almost to the point in their lives where they're incapable of dreaming.
Yeah.
And that's just selfish and really mean-spirited stuff. So you, in combating that, I guess you got to really consider the source. As we touched on at the beginning, like, this is just a jaded, cynical old bastard who is stuck in a rut.
Mm-hmm.
And you're going to give value to their, you know, just callous indifference to your ideas and dreams. You can't give value to that.
No way.
That's just toxic and defeating on every level. And there's just no reason.
All these different scenarios that we've talked about regarding critique and criticism.
Mm-hmm.
One, consider the source. Absolutely. Two, then sit down, or actually, you know what? After you consider the source, then two, if it is a direct criticism of something that you can respond to, then ask questions on how you can improve.
That's awesome. Right? That's awesome.
And then the other things are this. If it's something that you need to sit down and think about, you need to sit down, you need to be honest with yourself. What really is true? Is there some shreds of truth in this? Is there some shreds of truth? And then if that's the case and we're honest with ourselves, then we fix it. Because you can learn a lot and fix a lot of things and make things better by doing that. If there's real valid criticism inside of what these people are saying. And then the last thing is, what is false? What are the agendas that this person might have? What kind of, like you said, rut is this person? What kind of a miserable life are these people leading? And if you find a lot of falsities in that, then again, take it, put it right in the trash.
Mm-hmm.
Because again, ways you can combat this stuff, being mindful and then being your harshest but fairest critic. If you do that stuff, that's a lot of ammo, man, to battle the critiques, whether they be fair critiques or unfair critiques.
Oh, I think in the many years I've been playing, let's leave it at that. I think the best defense to any of this that I've had is, I don't think your opinion of me could be much worse than mine. So
there you go.
You really don't have a lot of power here, sir.
Yep.
In dogging me out, because I've gone to the inner rings of hell in critiquing myself, and you don't have a prayer when it comes to matching that. So does it sting a little sometimes? Yeah. Is it maybe on occasion someone you would prefer to have nothing but positive things? Yeah, but still, there's a lot of value and a lot of power in not being too full of yourself on occasion.
Absolutely.
When it comes to this stuff.
Being realistic, being humble in your abilities, and of course, being able that your abilities are as a sharp as you can make them. Mm-hmm. In other words, make your abilities as good as they possibly can be, and then bring that to the gig. Again, like we said before, if you're as prepared as you can possibly be, you're there with good intentions and do the job well, that in itself, a lot of times, will circumvent any bad problems.
Yes.
Now, John, part two of this show, this is the easy part. This is the show. For most people, it's the easy part. And that's the compliments
for most
aspect.
Of you.
Yeah. Yeah. But, I mean, it's not always the case, because there are some folks that can take compliments almost worse than criticism. And what we want to talk about with the compliment aspect is there are ways that you need to respond to compliments as well. Because, again, like we talked about before, sometimes people respond in very strange ways to that.
Mm-hmm.
Again, most people don't have problems with it, and they can respond with humility, and they can respond with thanks for that type thing. But I have complimented people on occasion when I would say, man, that was tremendous. You sounded like a million bucks. And then they'll come back with something like, you like that? Wow, man, I was really struggling tonight, man. It wasn't happening. And then, you know, that in its turn comes back on the person that gave the compliment, makes them feel a little bit like a chump.
Yeah. You know, I get that. And I'm certainly one to be, you know, not dismissive, but sort of like, oh, man, I appreciate that, man. That's nice of you to say, but, you know, I feel like I could do better, blah, blah. I thought about this. There's an old theory that is difficult for most of us, and it's based on the old pride.
Yeah.
But someone a long time ago told me, I received a gift from someone and I had a really hard time with it. Like, you know, I didn't want to accept it. I didn't want to really, you know, just my ego, my pride, all of these things were like, look, I just want to help you, man. And I really struggle with it. And someone who was wise and just mature beyond their years said, you don't have the right in some ways to not accept that, because this person giving that gift to you, you know, you can't, you're taking that away from them. They're getting something out of it, and they feel good about that, and you're just pissing all over them. Mm-hmm. I never thought about that because I was so wrapped up in my ego. Like, man, I don't need your money. Man, I don't need that drum. Man, I don't need you like throwing me that gig. I got this, you know. Well, man, they had it just in the goodness of their heart, or maybe their higher power, for lack of better terms, spoke to them to say, man, I think you should help this person out. And then you're going to just take that away from them. A compliment can be the same way.
Mm-hmm.
They genuinely feel moved by your performance and want to tell you that. Who are you to say, man, whatever. I'm too wrapped up in my misery and insecurity to accept that. So I'm going to ruin your, you know, compliment and how you feel about giving it, because I'm just that callous and, you know, selfish.
Man, that's an excellent point.
That's not cool.
Yeah.
If a person's giving you a compliment, most of the time they're not looking for a handout or a gig or a, you just move them. You touch them some way. You inspired them some way. Or man, maybe they're just being really nice,
mm-hmm,
and didn't hate it.
Yeah.
Maybe, you know, well, but you don't have the right to be just dismissive about that.
Yeah, I think.
And it's hard, man. I get right. It. I've been guilty of that more than once.
Well, I think most of us, even when we're younger, have an innate ability to be able to at least get each other in the ballpark from the standpoint of what the intent is.
Mm-hmm.
And again, yeah, if you really get the best intentions from somebody and they pay you a heartfelt compliment, man, that is great advice, man.
I just think
it really is.
99% of the time, that's all it is. It's a genuine, heartfelt compliment.
Yeah.
We get too wrapped up in, you know, why are you saying that? No, man. Most people aren't going to go out of their way to give you a compliment with some crazy agenda or ulterior motive. It just, most of the time, it just isn't happening, man.
Yeah. And you know, again, here we are sounding a little bit like a broken record. Consider that source. Right. If it's, again, if you get a good feeling, it's a heartfelt compliment, consider the source that is exactly what you said it is.
We know the few people who have ulterior motives.
Yeah.
Even then, just say, hey, man, thanks, bro. I appreciate it.
And move on. File it away.
Yeah.
Now, John, let's talk about a couple of scenarios that can happen from time to time that can have a tendency to have some negative connotations to it, or at least have you respond negatively when it comes to compliments. And this is really important to for your future growth. One, it happens all the time. You finish a gig, and let's say you're at either a club, private event, where people are just flat out getting hammered. You have some drunk come up to you. Man, you were awesome. Beautiful. Best drummer in the world. Best band in the world. You were unreal. Consider the source. Because, dude, you wouldn't believe how many times I've been on gigs.
You should say it in a girl's voice, man.
Right. You wouldn't believe how many times I've been on gigs where other band members would come up to me and they would go, dude, these guys just said we were the best band we've ever heard. And I'm like, yeah, did they smell like Jim Beam? Yeah, right. You got to be honest with yourself in this kind of thing.
He finished his sentence after he got up from falling down.
Yeah, here's where the danger lies in something like that. If somebody that receives this compliment, whether it's a drummer or another musician, and let's say that they are literally fishing for comp, they're looking for something to validate themselves in that way without being honest and without considering the source, it can have people really sit back and rest on their laurels and think, well, man, these people think we're the best thing they've ever heard. These people said that I was the best drummer. That this guy said I was the best thing they've ever heard. And I'm going to be right back here playing in this venue in 2 weeks. So, man, I'm going to hang back. Fat cat don't hunt, baby.
That's a bad place to be.
That's a bad place to be. And so there's not that many dangerous sides to compliments, but that's one. Again, consider the source and be honest with yourself. Be honest and mindful with yourself. You can take, again, that compliment and you go, oh, thank you very much. I appreciate it.
It's really kind.
That was very kind.
All right.
But then take that compliment and put it over here. Because, man, I'll tell you, there's been times, and I know this has been the same thing, man, with different groups you've played with. You've played in an event. You've played a concert. You've played a club. The band was average at best that night. It wasn't a good night. At times the wheels are coming off, right? You're just trying to put it between the lines on the road, right?
Yep.
Get finished with the gig. Somebody comes up. Best bands ever played this venue. You guys were amazing. Take it all in stride, my friend. Be honest with yourself and be better the next time.
That's great. Because yeah. It's like, man, thanks, man. And you know what? Strive to be exactly that next time.
Yeah.
But don't get wrapped up in it.
Yeah.
Well, it still comes down to the fact that, and if you're moving someone positively or, you know, affecting their night in a positive way, just be cool. Be like, hey, thanks, man. That's great. And look at it for what it is. I made someone feel good about being here tonight.
Right.
Awesome.
Yep.
You know, that doesn't make you the greatest. It doesn't. And at the same time, you can't belittle it just because they're drunk. You know, they meant it.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure if they were sober, they wouldn't go, man, you effing suck, man. You guys right. are a piece of crap. No. Yeah. They're just music fan, maybe, you know, and they were heightened in their happiness.
Yeah.
It's all good.
Absolutely. And much like the criticism aspect that we were talking about earlier, it also works from the complimenting side as well, that not only we want you to accept compliments the right way and take them for what they are, but also it works again on the giving side as well when you give people compliments. Don't give compliments just to give them, you know. Be honest with your compliments. They're even in a bad situation, if you want to compliment, so there's something you can find and be honest about it when you're doing it.
You know, it's funny that this compliment thing is presented in, as you know, I did something this week that I don't normally do or get very excited about doing. And I just put a video up from a gig. And it's rare that I do that. I have my demons and I have my issues and I'm not a big self-promoter. Instead of dissecting this video to no end and talking myself out of putting it up, I told myself before I even took the video, I'm just going to put this up. I'm not going to, you know, I did it right after the gig. And I said to myself, no matter what, you know, you're going to handle this in a rational and respectful way. You're going to be grateful for any positive comments and genuinely appreciate them. But take it for what it is, you know? It's just people enjoyed it. That's fine. You don't have to go and squash their opinion or your opinion of yourself. And so it was an exercise for me that, you know, for me, it was hard to do. But I did, and man, it was awesome.
It sure sounded good.
A lot of positive feedback. And I made it a point to respond to each and every, you know, remark. And it was something that really, when we're talking about this part of the topic today, was a real exercise in getting past insecurities, getting past fear, but at the same time, accepting people's opinions and being grateful for them. And I would have been grateful for a negative, not negative, but a criticism as well.
There wasn't nothing to criticize, man. That thing sounded good.
Well, I appreciate it, man.
I gave you the thumbs up on it, brother.
Well, it was definitely, it turned out to be great, man. It was great. It was a great, I'm happy I did it. And I think that, you know, man, I've been around, man, and I still battle with all of this. But there's an exercise in something that I did that ended up being really cool. So, you know, sometimes you have to implement these things or put something out there in order to, you know, practice this stuff we're talking about. I did it because I knew we were going to talk about this. I'm like, I'm going to do it.
I have a criticism of your video. Next time, tag the show, you hump.
I needed to get through this first one.
Dude, if you would have tagged the show between your boys here, we would have had over 3,000 views on our two videos.
Dang it. Numbers be damned. I put a video up on my playing and nobody got hurt. So there you go.
I thought it was funky, man.
Awesome, thanks. But I don't say that to talk about it. I say that to say it is a real perfect example of all of these things we talk about and what, you know, insecurities, humble, being owning what you do, all of these things, you know, just practice what we preach because it's going to serve you well in your career, in your growth, in your attitudes, and also in how you look at people and even individuals. You know, you take this with a grain of salt. Man, I'm blown away. This person complimented me. My God, that's so, that wouldn't have happened had I not put this out there. So all of that to say, you know, on your gig, if you're putting up some content, really focus on this stuff we're talking about and apply it. And I think it's benefiting you to no end to really keep things in perspective and have your wits about you by way of both criticism and compliments.
And kind of wrapping this up before we move on to our segment, really speaking to the younger audience here, the high schoolers, the college students, the 20s, the kids that are in their 20s that are doing these gigs, that are working, starting to get out there in the workforce, start early on this. Be patient, but be mindful. Really think about what's going on when you're either getting compliments and or criticism, and of course when you're giving compliments and criticism. I wish that I would have been a little bit more, or significantly more mindful when I was in my 20s, man, because I feel like it, I set myself back quite a bit from taking other chances and things after getting criticized for, you know, certain things that I would do or wouldn't do, you know. So that's the main thing, is start early and often. Practice this mindfulness, practice this patience when it comes to learning how to respond to these different types of situations. And man, it will pay off in mega dividends, because again, I think virtually everybody that we know that's successful are nice, even-keeled folks that do a great job with this kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
They really do.
Very true.
Yeah. So, John, let's finish up with our segment for the day. We haven't done an underrated drummer in a hot, hot minute. You want me to go?
Go.
My guy that I'm going with today is a little old Akron, Ohio native.
LeBron James plays drums?
He does, man.
That's crazy. What can he do?
Well, he's underpaid on top of it.
I'll say.
Yeah. It's from a band called Devo, the Spud Boys. And it's their drummer, Alan Myers.
Mm-hmm.
He's one of those guys that you don't realize how good of a drummer he was. Or at least I didn't when I was a kid. I didn't realize how good of a player he was until you go back and listen to the stuff. And then you go back and you think, man, boy, not only is this guy a great player, but boy, he is super creative in a really unorthodox band.
Art student kind of way.
Yeah, absolutely. But he's got chops and can play on top of it. So anyway, give a little background on this guy. First off, he played with the band from the late 70s up until the late 80s, roughly 1987. So he was with them during their most popular period,
right
back during the MTV heyday when they were on TV a good bit. And he had a very unique ability to take these quirky songs that were written to sound futuristic and kind of robotic and automated, because they used a lot of early synth technology and electronics technology. He had a unique ability to make these things feel really good, mm-hmm. but yet have that kind of futuristic, unorthodox feel to it. And so he would get creative with these different parts, man. He would play these different weird kind of sometimes linear parts, sometimes just very kind of unorthodox tom parts with weird cymbal stabs and stuff. He was, again, one of these guys that was a little bit of a precursor to some of the guys that are playing modern drum and bass and electronic stuff. And he was doing it sort of in real time, you know, as opposed.
No doubt.
Yeah. And so some of his highlights. John, have you ever tried to play the Devo cover of Satisfaction by the Rolling Stones with that whacked out pattern he plays?
No.
Try that one for a little while. That's one. So listen to Devo's version of Satisfaction. You've always got the massive Devo hit, Whip It. That's got a unique little hi-hat pattern that he plays all the way through, which if you haven't played that song before, it'll challenge you with that hi-hat opening that he puts in there.
Yep.
It's in kind of in a cool place. He's also got a couple of not-so-popular tunes that he just did some really creative stuff on. One of the cuts is called Freedom of Choice. It's also the name of one of their popular albums. I think that's the album that Whip It is on. Also, he had a really unique tune called Ton O' Love, which is a real Tom Heavy-based kind of industrial-sounding tune that's off of that Freedom of Choice album. And then he's also got a tune called Devo's got a tune called Uncontrollable Urge. That's kind of that was a little bit of a minor hit back in the late 70s that he played really cool sounding things on it as well.
Mm-hmm.
He died about 4 years ago from stomach cancer.
Mm.
So we don't have him anymore. The wonderful Josh Freese has been in that band for probably 20 years.
That speaks volumes about
yeah.
how important this cat was in that band.
Yeah.
They're hiring that young up-and-comer.
Yeah. Yeah. His
Who's he playing with now? Like
Stone.
Robert Goulet?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, he's been posting a lot of stuff on that Sting tour. He's killing it.
Yeah. But one last thing about Alan Myers. His band members used to call him the human metronome.
Mm.
So he obviously had good time. So that's my guy.
That's good stuff, man. He was an awesome, awesome player in a, like you said, you know, had this kind of perfect blend of creativity and groove, but still sounding sort of, you know.
That weird, yeah, it's just this weird, it's hard to describe unless you just listen to it, man. Yeah. It's just a weird kind of a cross between futuristic, robotic, industrial kind of a sounding thing.
Programmed almost, yeah. But at the same time, like
right.
Plenty of human. Good stuff, man. Mine is, I kind of tend to do this on these underrated drummers in that, I don't know if most people think about it, they consider him underrated, but we just don't talk about this guy enough. And my guy this week is Carlton Barrett.
Awesome.
He's a drummer for the Wailers, Bob Marley's drummer. And I think when I say underrated, there's plenty of people like, oh, I love him and blah, blah, blah. Of course you do. But the reason I want to lean on this cat is I thought about the influence and the just the foundation that he is. And when you think about Carlton's contribution to reggae, I view him like I would Kenny Clarke and Max Roach and bebop, or Billy Cobham and fusion, or, you know, like you talk about, you know, Bonham and Carmine and heavy rock playing, you know, they're just like the ground, Earl Palmer.
Yep.
I'm talking about the groundbreaking, the vocabulary is built on this, the just the absolute textbook Bible of reggae drumming. You're going to this guy, put on Legend, and everything from that 70s Bob Marley stuff, it is a derivative of Carlton, man.
Yep.
And this cat, I mean, there's not a track that doesn't feel like $1 million. There's not a track that doesn't have creative off the wall and outside of the box things. We're talking about, man, we're talking about 1972, 73.
Actually, late 60s, man.
Yeah, but I mean, when the stuff that really became iconic.
Right.
You know, Exodus and that. We're starting to get into that.
Catch a Fire.
Huge, huge stuff here. He's creating it.
Yep.
You know, and we think about some of these early rock and roll drummers were the same way, like, you know, the Chess stuff and all that. Man, they're at ground zero here. This dude was there. That's him. And everything, like I said, everything from there on in roots reggae music is derivative of his catalog in some way, shape, or form. And then on top of that, you think about, you know, all these drummers from Stuart Copeland or, you know, Philip Fisher or Chad Sexton and, like, you know, all these reggae influenced funk and rock acts, you know, and a lot of that stuff's coming straight out of this cat's
even the
original approach.
Even the tuning, man. That real distinct tuning.
Definitely.
You know, that he would use. And you know, another one, man, that kills me, the one that kills me, that is, to me, it is the ultimate Carlton Barrett, is that tune Crazy Bald Head and that whacked out hi-hat pattern. That's the pattern that Vinnie Colaiuta used on some of the Zappa reggae stuff, man, like Lucille Has Messed My Mind Up. And I actually heard Vinny doing it first and had no idea that Carlton Barrett, he got it from Carlton Barrett.
That's what I'm saying, man.
Yep.
This guy is gold. He is, we should be talking about him in the same breath as our heroes.
Mm-hmm.
Because he's that influential and that just definitive in a genre. You can't belittle that in any way, shape, or form. You have to champion everything he did. And again, man, I mean, nothing feels better than that stuff. It's unbelievable.
Yeah,
it's seamless. And he was doing this stuff as a kid, young. He and his brother were young and playing, you know, Lee Scratch Perry stuff, and like he was in early. And clearly, Bob saw all that is this dude, and is a huge part of Bob's sound and vibe. Just can't say enough about it. Go put on Legend. It just covers a lot of ground and just shows the brilliance of this dude. Carly, man, what a monster.
Awesome, man.
We need to be talking about him more.
Great call.
Thank you, sir.
All right, folks, that's going to do it for this week. As always, stay in touch with us. You can email us at our email account. We're drummersweeklygroovecast@gmail.com. Our Facebook account, facebook.com/drummersweeklygroovecast. And tweet us. We're at DWGroovecast or twitter.com/DWGroovecast. We look forward to hearing from you. New shows every Monday. Every single Monday, John. Every Monday. You can find us. You can find us on iTunes, Google Play Podcast, Stitcher, Podbean, all your favorite podcast apps, even those wildcat places like Player FM and TuneIn. Listen to us on your Alexa. Now, she'll probably go off there in the living room there.
Order you a dollhouse.
Order me Legend from Bob Marley.
I like it. That wouldn't be so bad.
Yeah, so every Monday, subscribe to us. You can find us on all your favorite podcast apps. That's all I got, man. I'm going to go practice for my gig this weekend.
Your one drops?
There's no, not a one drop. That's the only style not found on this gig.
That's too bad.
All right. Until next week, we'll see you then.
Bye-bye.
Bye. Say I'm dead again. And I don't suppose I'm coming.